I want to go back to the question of the dictatorship and the Vanguard Party and come at it from a different angle, because there's another way in which the questions around that come up. And I think it kind of comes up like this. People say, all right, you say there's a need for a revolution.
Before you get to that, I just wanted to ask you, do you think we've touched enough on, gone enough into this whole identity politics thing? I mean, I was wondering, because, you know, different questions have come up when we're talking, and we've kind of gone with it, you know, but I wondered, have we said enough about what you were raising originally about this identity politics thing? Because I definitely want to get to what you were just starting into, but is there more to be said about that identity politics?
Okay, I guess I was thinking that we had gone at it quite a bit, both from the angle of philosophically what's wrong with that understanding, and also got into what are the implications for revolutionary struggle coming off of that. So I did think that we had gone at that sufficiently.
I mean, do you think we dealt enough with some of the political dimension or the political expression of this? In other words, I felt like we philosophically discussed that a lot, but
not enough.
In other words, what are the political implications of identity politics, and how does it get posed against what we're talking about, against proletarian revolution? I thought maybe we could explore that a little bit more. Because I think maybe some people would say, like when you were responding to what I said, you said, well, people would say, okay, we're not saying nobody else can have an opinion about it, but only people who experience this oppression can actually, you know, take responsibility for formulating and coming up with it and bringing forth an answer to it. So, you know, that's kind of on the philosophical level, but it also kind of leads up to the political level, because there are political implications of that. You know, I mean, it seems to me that political implications of that are pretty reformist. You know, in other words, well, we talked a bit about how this would wall off each struggle from, like you said, maybe people from their own, each from their own little castle could reach out to others, but you couldn't really have the kind of broad unity we're talking about, and you couldn't have any kind of objective basis for determining which program within each of these little spheres, walled off spheres, would be correct and incorrect. And so it seemed to me that that's the philosophical dimension, but it also pushes right up against the political, because then, you know, like, how are you going to build a movement, and how are you going to even know what's right and wrong in order to build a kind of movement that could actually make a revolution? And do these people who hold this view even think that a revolution is what they want, or what's possible or desirable or whatever?
Well, I think the way that it comes out is that there are forces coming from this general viewpoint who would say revolution is the goal. But when you come down to what does their line and outlook, what kind of struggle do they get involved in, what kind of practice do they take up, it falls far short of that, and in fact doesn't have the perspective of, you know, gathering the forces that could make revolution.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, but how do they see a revolution coming about, and where do they see the forces coming from to make such a revolution, and what do they think such a revolution would lead to? I mean, those are things that occur to me right away when you're saying that.
Yeah, they occur to me too, and it's hard to get an answer, because for a lot of these forces, they don't have that kind of, you know, have not put out before the people that they're trying to organize, or other forces that they're trying to, you know, link up with, that kind of analysis and that kind of theoretical work. And some of them even raise it in terms of, you know, well, we're newer and we have to develop some of this. Others actually do stop short of the point of revolution and say straight up that that isn't a goal at this point, or at least at this point that isn't the goal, and that they have a goal of building up resistance, forging links between the different oppressed groups, but don't put that forward in terms of actual preparing for and gathering the forces to make revolution.
Well, you know, one of the things that occurs to me when you're saying that is, if, you know, I know there's this line out there along with what you were saying about, well, you can't just go out and introduce people to revolution right away. You got to work with them. You got to get things moving. You got to build a movement, and then you can talk about revolution. But the problem is that you do have to build a movement. You do have to build resistance. You do have to build struggle. And, you know, we're actively seeking to do that, as you know perfectly well, being in the thick of a lot of it. But if you don't bring, we've experienced this, and it goes back to what we were talking earlier about the whole thing from the Vietnam War to today. If you don't, from the beginning, bring out to people the real deal, if you don't tell them what you're really up against, and you don't put this in that context, then what happens is people get disoriented and lose heart after a while, because even if you make real progress on a particular front of struggle and make some gains and wrench some concessions and beat back some attacks, like we talked about, they keep coming back and shit keeps getting even worse. And people then lose heart and get disoriented because they don't have a larger view of where this all has to go and how it could, you know, get there, at least in, you know, in basic terms. So I think you're actually setting people up to be further demoralized if you don't do that. I think there's a lot of experience that says that.
Yeah, I mean, this is even something that we've seen and been trying to grapple with, how to help people get beyond in a lot of our own work, you know, because you take something like the front of, you know, organizing people to take on the brutality and even murder that the police are being unleashed to bring down on, you know, oppressed and exploited people right now. Well, you've got some people who have stepped into that battle and really fought hard for justice, some of them being motivated by particular cases where even their loved ones were brutalized or murdered by the police, and who came forward from being motivated by justice in a particular case to seeing the need for justice for all of the people who've been victimized by this. And they've waged a lot of, you know, very heroic resistance around that. But then at a certain point, you know, they see that most of the time, none of the pigs who do this shit get punished at all, or at most get a slap on the wrist. But then you come up to a situation like the Abner Louima case, where a number of cops did in fact get convicted, and then you get a decision like this reversal, you know, at the appeals court level, where they threw out the convictions of all the cops except the one who confessed. And then that does pose to people, what are we fighting for here? You know, we did all this work and we got a little bit of justice on this front, and now it got turned back. So I think it's important, the point that you're raising about bringing out the perspective of where this needs to go, and also approaching it from a thing of bringing people along step by step. Because one heartening thing coming off of the reversal in the Louima case was there was recently a demonstration of about 100 people in Brooklyn, and one of the key parts of it was some of the family members of other people who had been murdered or brutalized by the police. And they were standing strong in this and kind of bringing forward two things. One was that this reversal was a slap in the face for all of them. You know, it wasn't just a slap in the face for Abner Louima and his family, but it was a slap in the face. You know, Mrs. Baez came out. Boy, I'm trying to remember. I'm going to miss everybody's name here, so let me not try to give everybody's name. But a number of the parents whose children had been murdered by the police came out to participate in this, and they were saying this was a slap in the face to all of us. But at the same time, they were saying, we're not going to give up the fight for justice on this front. And that was important, an important manifestation of that. But it's also been important the degree to which we and others have worked to give people a broader view of what's going on here, so that it isn't just a linear thing of it gets determined by what progress we're making on this point, that people can actually be sustained even in the face of a decision like that, where a few cops who had participated both in, you know, the torture of this guy and also the cover-up of that torture then get exonerated by the courts. It didn't, you know,
totally demoralize
them and disorient them to the point that they were going to step back from it and give up.
Well, I think, you know, like Marx said a long time ago, like, it's important to mobilize the masses to fight against, you know, the immediate instances of their oppression, partly so they're not reduced to the condition of broken wretches who, you know, in other words, they can be even more viciously exploited and oppressed, and also so they, you know, are not incapable of waging the larger struggle that does have to be waged. I think that's still a very important point in relation to all this, you know, but it does bring out that if your only aim is to try to reform a few things, you're going to be overwhelmed by the working of the system ultimately. That doesn't mean it's not important to fight for certain reforms or concessions or to beat back certain attacks, but if that's the highest horizon that's being put forward to people, they are at some point. I mean, even if people don't fully embrace the full revolutionary program that represented by our party and that we're putting forward, they're still influenced by it when they come in the struggle, and it still gives them, you know, higher vision and more hope for the future, even if they don't fully understand or embrace it all at a given time, you know. And I think that's very important too, even in terms of being able to sustain particular or partial struggles, let alone to really get ultimately to the solution to all this.
Yeah, I think that is important, and we've even seen that in practice, and I don't want to get too far from what we're doing, but I just want to bring forward a couple of things on this, because we usually each year put out an editorial leading into October 22nd, the National Day of Protest to Stop Police Brutality, and we try to bring together what's the state of the movement of resistance on this front, what are the challenges that it faces, and to point the road ahead. And we try to do that in two ways. One is, what are the immediate steps that this movement has to take to continue the fight for justice on this front? But we also assess it from our perspective as proletarian revolutionaries. And when we first began to do this, when we get it out to everybody, but I wasn't sure what impact it was having. And then we'd find out things like some of these parents would get the thing, read over it, and this one woman Xeroxed it and did a mass mailing, and she contacted one of our comrades who worked in, you know, in the local coalition with her, said, "I need you to help me do this mailing." And, you know, the person had a lot of things to do and they weren't sure. And the woman said, "Well, this is important for October 22nd. So the comrade, "Okay, I'll make some time and come and help you do the mailing." And they get there and they find out that what the woman wanted them to mail was copies of our editorial on October 22nd, and she said, "Everybody needs to get this." Now, that didn't mean that this woman had become a proletarian revolutionary and was on that basis wanting to spread this out, but she was like, "Everybody needs to read what's said here, because this is what's going to get them to see what we've been accomplishing on this front and how we need to keep on keeping on," I think is how she put it.
Yeah, and I think that the point is, even while she may not agree or others may not agree with everything in there, it does provide a larger vision that enables them to see even the particular struggle in a larger sense, which brings me back to the identity politics thing, because, you know, like one of the things, for example, well, this is true in all of our work, but it's been true in our, you know, in the our efforts in uniting with others and other people's efforts in the October 22nd coalition, has been to unite people broadly. We haven't said, you know, okay, let's divide it up as narrowly as we can. You know, black people experience police brutality should form one group. White people who might experience it, and there have been some, and, you know, been involved in the coalition, you know, should organize another group. And, you know, Chicanos, Puerto Ricans, you know, everything, women should organize a different group than men. That's not to say that, you know, like, They're not going to be, and there's not a positive role for various forms of organization that develop among particular sections of the people to fight particular oppression, but to make a principle out of it, you know, and to divide everybody up. And you can keep going with that too. You know, you can always find another basis on which to divide people. You know, they can be divided up almost endlessly into narrow and narrow groups. But what, you know, but the one of the strengths in opposition to that of things like October 22nd has been to unite people broadly, and it's, I think, you know, we've talked about uniting the people directly under the gun with other people, even from the more, you know, the middle class strata, for example, who are outraged by the injustice. And that's one of the real strengths of the, and not just, you know, it's a strength of the October 22nd coalition, but it's a strength of the whole United All Can Be United, and of the bringing forward the proletarian line to lead that, You know, it's an expression of that line and the strengths of that line that's being manifested there, even though people, again, as part of a united front, have many different viewpoints about different questions. And I, to me, like this identity politics thing, what, you know, again, different forms of oppression do have their particularity. You know, the oppression of women is different than the oppression of black people, for example. Discrimination against, you know, gays and lesbians is different than the exploitation of immigrants and the garment factory. But it also, these things all interconnect and interpenetrate, and most of all, they're all fundamentally rooted in the same system and in the nature of that system, and they all have their same solution. If they're all rooted in the same thing, then you have to uproot that system in order to get rid of these things. And walling off things, or saying, you know, everybody should go to their own, you know, their own, you know, narrow circle, and wall themselves off at least to a certain degree from everybody else, and develop their own truth, you know, and their own understanding of oppression separated from the larger picture is not going to, it couldn't lead to anything but reform at best. And it seems to me falls, you know, woefully short of being able to really deal with the problem. And really, you know, represents on the part of people who've consolidated this into a line, does represent, at least to a certain degree consciously, but at least unconsciously, a statement that revolution is not possible and or not desirable.